As we pass the circle at Memorial Bridge, part of the 265 trees, most of them dogwood, were already in and work being done on the rest. And I pointed out that this project was a gift of the 1965 inaugural committee, an appropriate stamp to leave on this town. It spoke of this administration, and I think my very personal gratitude and empathy came through in tone, though I didn't say it in words. And here I looked for the Dale Millers, but did not find them on my bus. And then, just as we were approaching the White House, we came to the last big challenge on this bus trip, the perfect before and after. Rawlins Park, with its lush magnolia selangianas, mellowed in with some 30 or so years, pools and benches and the statues. And then the raw, barren, scraggly Walt Whitman Park. At least on my bus, they got the idea of what it could become. I waved at Lizzie Stripp as we drove into the White House gate, and I at least had enjoyed myself thoroughly, and I think our passengers did. I went upstairs quickly for just a few minutes, and then was back in the state dining room, going from group to group, trying to draw attention to the wonderful blown-up pictures that Cynthia and Nash had put together as displays of the parks in use, many of them made for my Saturday the 30th trip. I searched for the David Lloyd Kriegers to describe for them the delightful little vignette of how I stopped to see the site of their fountain and found the six bicyclers from foreign countries there. Cherry and Dubonnet and orange juice were passed. And then, at 1, we went into the East Room for the luncheon. There was never any receiving line. We'd been together all morning, so many of them I know well. And I, rigid holder out for receiving lines, for once felt it was gayer and more natural this way. The tables were a triumph. Bess is an artist, and today was perfection. We had, once more, the menus. We had Uncle Sam's hat full of jonquils this time. The lunch was light and delicious. Consommé April, crepes Chesapeake, and ended with a repeat favorite, the flower pot. And in it, a daffodil. What else? I had really worked on the seating. All of us had. I had the ambassador of the Netherlands, who has contributed bulbs to at least one school, more, I think, on my right. Walter Washington on my left. Mary's sister, Mrs. Fordyce. And then one of my favorites, Mr. Joseph Danzansky of Giant Food Stores, and was thrilled to hear from him his own story of how, with all the burning and looting, the window breaking, the turbulence on 14th Street, on both sides of him, his store, the first landscaped one, remained unharmed. It was not only that, surely. He's made every effort to have good community relations. The area is almost totally Negroes, and he has had a Negro manager. And right after the riots, with most of the stores closed, Walter has appointed him as one of the dispensers of foods for emergency for people who had been burned out. He's full of zest and faith and a delightful man to be around. And then there was Mrs. Lewis Eilers, whose husband is president of Eastman Kodak. Mm-hmm. And I talked to her about the young folks program in the summer, Diana's, and what a wonderful tool those Kodaks they had generously given had been in the hands of the young folks who wanted to see their environment and each other. They wanted to see the results of their handiwork in those little neighborhood parks. I think the cameras had played a very useful part. And then Mr. J. Irwin Miller, one of the most interesting and vital men that I have met in my 4.5 years here. Intense, practical, I'm mad about him, and Mrs. Duncan Phillips of the gallery, and then Mr. L.P. Gilvin of the Associated General Contractors of America. We hope his organization will landscape Walt Whitman Park. Their building is right across from it. And I had prepared some wonderful before and after pictures of beautiful Rawlins Park and naked Walt Whitman right next to it for his use, and I wanted to get to know him better. We have a mutual interest in the Paladura Canyon and in Joe Batson. And then Mrs. DeWitt Wallace of Reader's Digest. It has been a very helpful channel in telling this country about beautification. For once, I was satisfied with my speech. It was almost like that old Texas governor's story. Get full of your subject and let her fly. And I have 3 years of this subject, in my heart and head. And a lifetime of interest behind that. And I was keenly aware that this was the last time I would see many of these people, and I wanted them to know very much how grateful I was. Over the past 3 years, the people in this room have produced nearly $2.5 million to take steps toward making this nation's capital more livable and more beautiful. Not only is your handiwork enjoyed by the 3 million people who live and work in this city, it can be seen also by 17 million visitors who come here each year. And our work here has inspired other cities across the country. This has been one of the most lovely springs I can remember in Washington's history. It has also been one of the most poignant and grave. That fact underscores the urgency of improving our environment for all people. And then I launched into Buchanan Playground. A resume of the schools, Anthony Bowen, Syfax, Bryan, Kingsman. But what I enjoyed most was trying to recreate for them the picture of that day on Haynes Point, Saturday, March 30th. All of our 1,846 cherry trees were in bloom, and what looked like all the people in Washington were out enjoying them. Picnicking on the grass, bicycling, fishing, jogging, courting, playing on the Mexican playground equipment. I ran into folks from 3 different countries within hardly more minutes, and when I stopped to speak to one family sitting around their blanket loaded with sandwiches, they looked up and said, "Miss Johnson, we were just talking about you." I thought to myself, it is not I, but you, that they should be able to meet and thank for the sheer joy of that blossoming Saturday afternoon. The place that drew them was the place of beauty. And then, as always, I tried to get in my philosophy. My criteria of a project are that it receive the fullest use, that it can be easily maintained, and that the desire for it emanate from the neighborhood and its people. And then I described possible new developments that could mean a lot to the recreational opportunities, to the amenities of this capital city, the development of an Anacostia Park, 1,100 acres, and of Kingman Lake, a huge freshwater swimming lake, the equivalent of 100 swimming pools in size. These will take years and money to achieve. But this, in a small way, could be a kicking off point. And then the line that meant the most, one of the happiest experiences of these past 3.5 years, has been working with you. And then an introduction of Walter Washington, the main speaker. Together, he and I have been frequent visitors at schools, housing projects, and in the neighborhoods of Washington. In the most recent anxious hours for this city, he proved all what many of us already knew, that he is a wise, compassionate, understanding leader. He epitomizes what I think makes a great public servant. For him, no task is too big or too small. Threaded through everything he undertakes are zest and enthusiasm and a belief that you can rest from troubles, constructive forward action. I take great pride in introducing Mayor Walter Washington. The mayor looked so tired when he began that my heart ached for him. He spoke well, almost in a poetic strain. He spoke to the attitude, the almost joking attitude, that our work here in the city was of a cosmetic nature. His answer was that we on our committee make open spaces and recreation facilities a part of the daily living and the daily environment of people. And then he said so many kind, warm, generous things about me that I began to shrivel and look at my plate. But it was a great climax, and everybody liked it. The luncheon was over, close to 3. I went to the door and said goodbye as everybody filed out. And I had that mixed feeling of relaxation and job well done, with an undertone of sadness because this was in the way an end. It was an interesting montage of the people I've worked with. From government, Marvella By, Flavor Boyd, Fred Farr, Carol Forrest and Trudy Fowler, the John Heckingers, and both Dale and Lorraine McGee. 2 gentlemen from my splurge at Palm Beach, Henry Dudley and Fred Korth. The 2 other ambassadors, the Margines of Mexico and the Shimodas of Japan, both benefactors of beautification, and 2 very interesting gentlemen in their own fields, Mary Halperin and Philip Johnson. Donars, Big and Little, Gwen Kafritz, Enid Haupt, the Dale Millers for the inaugural committee, and a special warmth of a hand clasp for the Robert Inches of the S. Klein Company, who always come to our aid when we're stuck on a school. Lots of press, including Wolf von Eckhart and Betty Beale, and nearly all of my committee.
Exhausted.
And so I went upstairs about 3, exhausted, but the day still stretched before me. In just moments, I was back down in the library for the YWCA film presentation and tea with Mary Rockefeller, with officers and committee members of the YWCA, and 2 attractive young women who had been participants in a YWCA work camp. They gave me a film called Aim, Action, Achievement, made during that summer at the camp. Its subject, conservation, its actors, the young folks at camp, and its achievement, a trail in the Teton National Forest. They'd worked with the U.S. Forest Service, and they hope the film will inspire other groups of YWCA young folks to do conservation in their own home areas. The good works of the Rockefellers are endless, and so is my admiration for them. It grew just even one more notch when Walter Washington told me at lunch that Lawrence had invited him and his wife sometime to come out to Keneal Bay and get a rest. It's fast becoming an R&R center for the exhausted of this administration. We had tea and talk, and I was back upstairs in half an hour, but soon down again to watch the Head Start films. They were really quite good. Children delightful, completely spontaneous. The blonde volunteer a star herself, I coming in at the end of the line. And then back upstairs at 5 o'clock, Mary and Nash came in. We collapsed on the green sofa and talked about the future of our committee for nearly an hour. The fountains, getting them firmed up, the probable results of the day's lunch, how we could carry on our work. I worked a little with Ashton, and then about 7:20 went over to the bowling alley, stretched my muscles in 2 fast games, because the day had been all thinking and giving out of emotions, which needs for me to be balanced with exercise. Back upstairs, I recorded. I let the servants go, and then I did something I consider a real luxury. I went to the icebox and got a good cold dinner that had been left wrapped up on a plate by Zephyr. Took it to bed and ate while I watched television. Chief King gave me a rub, and I was ready for sleep by 11:30. One of the prettiest sights of the day had been Linda Bird, who had come in, her hair piled high, wearing a dress all lace and tucks and tiny pink ribbon, on her way to the Women's National Press Club dinner as the guest of Ohila LaHaye. I was pleased that she was going, and pleased that she recognized the fact that Walhilla had been a good friend to us. It is too easy to act hostile toward the whole press. I count, in fact, so many of them my friends.